This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning Show on the Horse Radio Network for October 25th, 2012, episode 517. Horses in the Morning is live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so today we bring you a highlight podcast from the Horse Radio Network. Sit back and enjoy episode 219 of the Eventing Radio Show as our intrepid hosts Samantha Clark and John Kyle take a verbal romp through the most recent and forthcoming three-day events here in the States and around the world. Plus, Lainey Ashker provides an update on her latest rides, and we find out what Maggie the OTTB is her next homework assignment will be. The Horses in the Morning Show will be back live tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., replete with riotous reports regarding all things equine. And don't forget to surf the web for the silliest, snarkiest, and snappiest classifieds and email them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. On Friday, we will share with you the top dozen, and the listener who submitted what Glenn and Jamie determined to be the best of the worst will win a pair of, what took so long to invent this, eliminated hoof picks. And born on this day in 1825, Austrian composer Johann Baptist Strauss. Warner Brothers very cleverly introduced millions of kids to his works when Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd starred in A Corny Concerto, where the Tales from the Vienna Woods carries the characters along in their usual path of merry mayhem. His waltzes are also great music to add to your musical freestyle for your canter work. Enjoy the show!
Welcome to the Eventing Radio Show. I'm Samantha Clark in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm John Kyle, just back in London, England.
Just back from Denmark. How was dressage, John?
Dressage was actually not with any trace of irony. It was quite exciting. We had some of the very best riders there. You get 15 in the Grand Prix freestyle. After the judging break, we had seven left, and I started going through them and went, oh, cool. All seven of these riders, are fresh from the Olympics. We had Adelinda Cornelissen, and interestingly, she was said to us, and she did, she just rode that horse a little bit lighter, and it was just a little bit more pleasing. I don't know why you'd mess with success, but that's what they said to her at the Olympics, why she didn't win a gold, and she's taken it on board. So, interesting times ahead in the World Cup circuit.
I did see, maybe it was you, someone retweeted her that she got a 10 for Harmony, and she was very happy. Why wouldn't you be happy?
Exactly, a 10 for anything.
I wish I could get Harmony with my children, 10 for that. Well, meanwhile, we had Fair Hill stateside, and we're going to talk all about that in this episode. We've got Lainey Ashker, who was fifth there. And a massive congratulations to Hannah Burnett, who won the three-star on her horse, Harbour Pilot.
Yeah, yay!
Who, of course, we had both Hannah and William Micklem on a couple of weeks ago as our guests, and which reminds me, I should have said last week, we had a correction from Georgia Subington. Thank you, Georgia. Completely my bad. Eric Smiley produced Gilt Edge, Aaron Mannion produced Custom Made, and Sonia Duke produced Bico, and William Micklem was actually responsible for brokering the sales. He didn't produce them. My apologies for that. But he has, of course, produced and sourced many other wonderful horses as well. And speaking of Fairhill, I thought it was interesting to see, there's been lots of talk about the Land Rover grants and whether they're worth the money. And I thought it was interesting to see Clark Montgomery, fresh from Wet Muddy Buccalo, come in with the fastest time of the day cross-country in the two-star, and to see Jenny Brannigan leading that division after the cross-country. And I can't help but think that that Nations Cup experience stood them in good stead.
There's nothing better than match practice, and the higher a class of competition you go to get that match practice, the better. And that particular weekend, Buccalo is where it's at in Europe, and the very best in the world were there, not least Mr. Nicholson and Mr. Young.
Yeah, and those conditions I think were very similar to what they saw at Fairhill.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, as I said last week, it is quite flat at Buccalo, but it was just quite tacky, the ground there. It's not particularly free draining. Speaking of draining in Europe, of course, many of the riders went on from Buccalo to the World Breeding Championships for Young Horses at Lyon d'Angers in southwest France, where we were getting quite wet twit picks coming in of the cross-country course until eventually the river... and I'm going to check it here. It's the River Mayenne, which runs through the site, burst its banks on Friday afternoon, resulting in the World Championships being abandoned, which was just a real kick in the teeth for everyone because all of those horses are prepared through the year. They're selected by the national federations. The relevant parts of the high-performance structure from all the nations competing are out there. And, of course, it's a long old drive with lots of diesel for everyone to go there and... only three quarters of them, because it was abandoned at lunchtime Friday, got to do dressage.
Such a shame. Although Kitty King was leading, I think, the seven-year-olds on Persimmon, and we'd had her on the show a few weeks ago too, and I was thrilled for her. But yes, very disappointing. I know some of them waited there, sort of wading around, and I think I even saw a picture of Mark Todd in the canoe.
Yeah.
And they'll go straight on to Poe, so we'll cross our fingers for better weather there this weekend.
And Poe has been very accommodating. A couple of young horses have redirected to the CIC two-star that runs alongside Poe. Poe is not near a river. It's on quite sandy ground. And although it might rain next weekend, weather forecast for during the weekdays this week is good. Laura Collett, who was doing very well in the dressage at Le Lyon, has in the meantime been all the way back to Britain for about 12 hours to drop off one set of horses, pick up the Poe horses, and she's at the moment, I think, just pulling into Le Domaine de Serre. So,
give that
long
girl
old
some
wig.
Foie gras, John. Well, Lainey Ashker, we're going to talk to her in a minute. She was at Fairhill, and not only did she manage to come fifth in the three-star, she was one of only three people to finish on her dressage score on the lovely... Anthony Patch, or Al, who's her off-the-track thoroughbred. She also won the bareback show jumping sponsored by Pro in, of course, no one else but Lainey could wear a sparkly neck strap. She's the queen of bling. So we're going to let's speak to Lainey, and then we're also going to bring Alison Stackpole back to find out how Maggie's doing. Lainey, what a fantastic weekend. Congratulations. You must be absolutely thrilled.
Yes, I am super thrilled. Al was awesome.
Al, and also I want to talk after that about the bareback show jumping. You're the big winner there.
Oh yeah. Well, and I have to say that it is way harder than what it looks. I mean, you know, I'm so glad I practiced because I hadn't, you know, really brought back my pony club days, you know, since I was in pony club. So it was probably, you know, horrible that I'm dating myself here, but probably a good 20 years ago. So I'm glad I practiced, and what better horse to do it on than Sheila Wolf's Jolly Good Sport. I've been campaigning this year, and who's moving up to prelim at Virginia Horse Trials. So, you know, he's typical, really uphill, bouncy, warm blood, Oldenburg canter, and he's been awesome. And I couldn't have done it without my my neck strap. So
your neck strap was that one of your belts? I noticed it was very blingy. What was that?
Well, actually, real story. Sheila went to Walmart because she's like, you need to get a jump strap. And I said, well, let's get something really blingy. So she went, and it was credit to Sheila. She picked out a few belts and went to Walmart and had to get a 2XL belt to fit around Sport's rather voluminous neck. So it was actually a human belt that was a 2XL that we got from Walmart, $10. So
very
couldn't go
cool.
wrong there.
You could start a trend there. I'm going to see William Fox fit at Rolex in a sparkly neck.
With a sparkly studded belt. Hey, and it gives you extra hold, extra grip with those studs. So I can't complain.
Now, I know I follow you on Twitter. I know you'd been practicing. Do you actually practice jumping and jumping a course, or did you just practice flat work? What did you actually practice bareback?
Sports got such a bouncy trot. I did a little bit of the trotting, but then I kind of gave that up. So I did a lot of canter work. And I actually rode a few different horses. I had tryouts on which horse I rode best. And it was between C-Jack, my homebred, who I had competed at two-star level and sold to Lewis Rogers. And then in Sport, and it ended up being the canter on Sport was more uphill naturally. And so he was therefore the easiest one to ride quicker. I practiced courses, and I practiced doing a little bit, you know, intermediate level height stuff and you know, short courses in my arena, and so I wouldn't fall off. And, you know, lots of practice.
Because it's impressive to watch the video, and we'll put a link to that on our website. But although the pictures might not look as impressive as, say, you know, Caroline Martin sailing over 5'11" when she did that at Plantation, to do a whole course is pretty testing, because you've got to keep your balance and stay in a rhythm and try and sort of maintain that for much longer.
Certainly, and just the turns alone. I mean, you have to have a horse that's willing to make those sorts of turns, and that, I mean, and no matter what, you're going to hit them in the back a bit, you know, like, and so you have to have a horse that's quite tolerant as well. I mean, it's a totally different feeling, because you don't have any stirrups. You can't, there's no tack to get out of. So there has to be a contact over the jumps. In addition to riding them forward, because it was all for time. So you have to have a pretty tolerant horse, and sport was definitely that.
Let's talk about Anthony Patch, who you came fifth on, one of only three riders to finish on your dressage score in the three star. But do you think that it helped your riding overall, the bareback jumping and the bareback practice that you did?
Oh, most definitely. I think, you know, the practice, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's get back to your pony club days. And I think any sort of practice like close contact like that really works on your balance and your overall connection with the horse. But also for me, it helped me get into that ring, being that I was in a place. It's always a lot more pressure, especially with the people I was riding against. I mean, you have Dan, you have, you know, Marilyn and Hannah Sue and Philip. And so you've got a lot of pretty phenomenal riders, you know, behind you and in front of you. And so you want to do well. So it was really good for me to get into that ring the first time on a horse that I was very confident, you know, on a little bit of a smaller course where I could make a few mistakes, and it was, you know, it was for fun, but it took a bit of the pressure off at the end of the day. So I was glad that I did that, aside from winning money and and, you know, bareback accolades. You know, it was good for me to kind of get the pressure off and to kind of get the little jitters out.
Good. Well, let's talk about Al. You finished on your dressage score. I mentioned that. Let's start with the dressage. A bit disappointing. You tweeted that naughty Al, no carrots for him on the dressage day. What went wrong?
You know, I swear Al just kind of woke up on the wrong side of the stall that morning. I mean, he had a great warm up earlier in the day. I tend to do with Al, especially at 3 days. Normally I don't have time at the horse trials. At the 3 days, I tend to have a little bit of a relaxation ride earlier in the morning and then have a shorter warm up just so I have enough energy, because he tends to be a bit on the lazy side. You know, I don't really know what went wrong. The warm up earlier in the morning was sensational, so I had a lot of confidence going in. I've been working a lot on shortening my reins and keeping my arms in front of me, and Kim had me watching the videos of the Olympic gold medalist in the dressage this year, the British girl, who has one of the best connections I've ever seen a rider have. Her arms are out in front of her, and her arms are so continuing with the horse. It's this complete symbiotic relationship, and so I really tried to emulate that. The problem was I never really had his attention from the beginning of that final warm-up to going into the arena. So as I went around the arena, you know, he was spooking at the judges. He was spooking at the cross-country jumps. He just was really not paying attention. So it was all I could do to ride the horse I had. And, you know, again, he did all the movements, and it was a nice looking test on the outside, but it was a time bomb on the inside. And all I can attribute it to is just, you know, him waking up on the wrong side of the stall. That's usually one of his better phases. So I was really disappointed, especially to get a mark of a 60, which, you know, back when I was 18, I would have been thrilled, but, you know, I was hoping to get in the high 30s with him. So it does with horses. It's constantly a humbling thing, and they're known to throw a few curveballs. So, yeah, you know, what can you do?
Was Kim there, and did she warm you up and help you? And what did she say afterwards? Or was she busy riding
her
own horse?
No, she made some time for me, and she was good. She kind of got on and off her young horse, and she helped me out earlier that morning, and then was able to get there towards the final part of my warm up before the test. And you know, she just said, yeah. She said, you know what? You rode the horse you had. You did a brilliant job doing it. And, you know, your two best movements were your flying lead changes, which is something that I've always struggled with as far as my timing. So, and those were the two best movements you cast. So there was something to be said with that. But No, I mean, it was quite a disappointment, I think, for both Kim and myself and for Al. But again, I mean, that's horses for you. You know, there's never a dull moment, and they always have something to throw at you. And I think the selectors will know that based on his overall performance since I've had him. I mean, he's always been pretty competitive in the dressage, so it's kind of just a fluke thing.
Yeah, and I should have said that's Kim Severson, who's your trainer, and who also we should congratulate won the 5-year-old young event horse class.
Yes, on Cooley, who's I believe still undefeated. I don't think he's been beat yet. So kudos to her. She's a DQ. I call her a dressage queen, and she's you know Buck has been extremely influential in my career as a rider. But what's really taken me to become competitive in the flat work has been Kim's tutelage, and she's taught me overall ringmanship. And I mean, you wouldn't believe anybody auditing any of my lessons would be like, "Gosh, that poor girl. She just makes her do about 50 corners per minute." I mean, I don't know how she sees she won't let me get away with anything. And if there's one step that's wrong and a corner is not perfect, then she will let me know. And so, it's been very influential in my career as a up and coming, professional and, not accepting mediocrity. And, she's definitely helped me with that for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm thrilled to see her back on the scene. And I know that, saw her. I haven't seen her this year, I don't think at all. And I saw her last year at Galway Downs, and we were talking about young horses. And she said that she wanted to. I think she just sold Tipperary Liardin and then to Nina. And she said, "I want to wait until I find something really special. I don't want to just get any horse." So it looks like she might have done that. So I'm very excited for her. I can't wait to see her competing back at the very top again. So let's move forward to cross country. You had a lot of rain Thursday and Friday, and especially Friday night, but Saturday, not too bad by the time you went?
It wasn't too bad. You know, I watched a lot of the 2-star go. I was quite nervous about the cross country. I mean, it's Fair Hill. The cross country is always, always influential. And funny enough, on Friday night, Buck and I were walking around the course, and he said, "Lainey," so I was, complaining about my dressage score as always. And he said, "Lainey, if you finish on a 60, I guarantee you'll place in the top 5, and you're on a horse that could finish on a 60. And, you kind of hear that and go, "Yeah, right, we're at Fair Hill." I mean, in all the 10 years I've ridden at Fair Hill, funny enough, I've never had a double clear across the country. I've ridden horses like Frodo and like Jamie, but I've always had a handful of time penalties just because, it's generally raining, the footing can be a bit heavy. And the courses are so demanding. And so, and to top it all off, Al was running in bar shoes for the first time, and not the first time, he ran at Morven, but after the AECs, he had a little bit of a bruise on his heel from one of the water jumps where he just kind of tripped out of it. And he's always had bell boots on, but happened to sting himself. So we had had him in bar shoes, and I figured, let's not change anything, drastically. If he's happy in these shoes, let's go ahead and run him. And so I was a bit worried how he was going to handle that footing in a different sort of feeling shoe. And, God bless the thoroughbreds, because, I come around the final minute and I just said, "Hey, do you have any more rings? And if you don't, we can stay here. But if you do, let's do it." And that horse just had a totally different gear. And the last three fences, we were flying, and I had to catch him a really good forward stride. So it, exerted the least amount of energy for him. And I was just tickled. He really answered every single question. There was not one fence that I would have changed on his part. And
I'm getting goosebumps listening to this.
Yes. So I was, it was by far, I have to say, I've had quite some phenomenal horses that I've ridden across the country, but that was probably one of my best rides, to date. I felt like I earned every jump, and I felt Al was right there, right behind me, paying attention. He was making up for being naughty boy on Friday.
And how did he recover, and how was he that night and the next morning?
Oh, I have to say, he recovered quite well. I mean, he always tends to run a bit high temperature-wise, but his heart rate came down crazy fast, which is, he actually won the best conditioned horse in the 3-star, which is pretty cool. I've never won that
Congratulations.
Before.
Congratulations. I didn't know that. Well done, you.
Yeah, so I was really excited about that. And even though he runs a high temperature, it was the fact that he came down so quickly in his heart rate And being that he had to have light work for a couple of the weeks after the AECs, just so that we could kind of nurse that bruise along, I was really happy. You know, he's not a spring chicken anymore. He's 13. So you always worry about, is my horse fit enough, you know? And I follow very closely Buck's fitness regimen with the horses, and it's never led me astray. So I was really happy, and there's not any horse in the entire world that I would want to walk in, you know, when it comes to a, you know, kind of a clutch sort of round where you need to have a double clear. There's no better horse to be sitting on than Al. And that's where tends to be my hardest phase of the show jumping, especially where I get my nerves really going. And, you know, there is not any horse that I'd rather be on than that one coming into that show jumping round, and having, you know, ridden Sport earlier in the day and had some success. I had my mojo going, and Buck was just by far the most amazing person to warm me up. He stayed. I know he had to leave to go ride Reggie at Poe. He's flying out of France, out of Philly. And so he was, you know, warming me up. And as soon as I went, he's like, great job. See you when I get back from France, you know. So everything just worked out really well.
Buck is one of the great guys. So how do you deal? I mean, you had Buck warm me up, but how do you deal with your nerves? Say, when do you start getting nervous? Like the hour before or half an hour before? And what do you do? And how do you talk yourself down? Walk us through it, if you don't mind, like the sort of half an hour before you show jump. Or,
well, you know, they're different nerves. You know, for cross country, my nerves, and I've noticed as I've gotten older, probably from experience, you know, I've had my track record, I've had a, you know, pretty bad accident, you know, a while ago. And since that accident, my nerves have been different nerves. And it's not a fear of dying, funny enough. It's more of a fear of disappointing myself, and disappointing the people that support me, and riding poorly. And so, you know, in preparation for cross country, I really, it sounds so weird, but I open up my mind, Jim, the book that I read, and I'll read a few phrases out of it that I constantly remind myself to kind of settle down. And for show jumping, you know, I seek a lot of guidance out of Buck, and I tend to, you know, I try to prolong the nerves and postpone them as much as possible. And I find when I finally do get on out and I begin to warm up that I actually start to settle. And Beth really reminds me as I go in. I mean, the first thing he always tells me is when you go in, you halt, you do your salute, you rein back, take a deep breath. You jump the first fence, take a deep breath. You jump the second fence, take a deep breath, just to keep breathing. And I find that as I breathe more, I think more, I relax more, and therefore I ride better.
And does it get easier, do you think, the more you do and the more big events and high pressure events?
Yeah, you know, I would like to say yes. The nerves haven't really subsided. I mean, I was just as nervous as I was, you know, going into show jumping at the AECs. I think it's something that, yes, you get used to being in those top places and you get used to being under pressure, but I think the nerves are all the same. I think it's a matter of how you channel them. Yeah. And I think I have the same amount of nerves that I've had since I was, you know, a younger girl, but I think I've gotten better at learning how to channel the energy and making it work for me as opposed to against me.
Yeah. Well, I'm so delighted for you, and congratulations again, Lainey. It's a fantastic weekend, a fantastic result. And what will you do with Al now? Does he get a break?
Al's going to get a break. He's going to get a couple of week break, and then he's going to, you know, basically, as he gets a little older, you know, I try to, my guys, they don't like to be left alone for too long. You know, he's the king of my farm. So when he doesn't get the attention that he wants, he's really quite upset. So, you know, he gets his grooming sessions and allow his hair to grow back. And we'll probably just do some trail riding, which won't be really much fun for me considering he's very spooky. But he'll certainly enjoy them. And then we'll look forward to going down to Florida in Ocala in January and gearing up for Rolex.
Perfect. All right. Well, we're going to bring Alison on the line now and talk to her and find out, go right back to the opposite end of the spectrum and see how she's getting on with Maggie. Alison, welcome back to the show and thanks for joining us again. And how on earth is Maggie?
She is doing very well. For the most part, things are going well for us.
I did see tweets about saddles being repaired and something about water jumps, or was that a puddle?
Well, my saddle fitter got hurt, so he had my saddle there for 2 weeks, so it was a little while before I could actually get on and ride her. So at this point, I've only ridden her about 5 times, but she's been doing well.
Okay, you know that Lainey and I are just discussing the bareback show jumping, so you might not get too much sympathy from Lainey, but I'm going to let Lainey take over a little bit and give you advice and ask you questions, so go ahead.
Okay. Lainey. So what have you, explain to me how the first couple rides have been. What have you been working on? How has she responded?
They've been very good. The first ride, I just jumped into a lesson that my trainer was teaching, and she was able to keep up with what everybody was doing. We walk trotted. By the end of that lesson, she was, she'd set up a couple of little, trotting poles, just single poles, and we were walking and trotting over them. And since then, I've taken her on a couple of shorter trails, and she's done well. Actually, yesterday, took her through water for the first time. I had to get off, and I wasn't sure we were going to make it through. We stood there for a while with me pulling on her, but we made it through, and then we actually had to go up on the trail and turn around and come back through a second time, and the second time she was a lot better about it. And we've done walk, trot, canter in the ring. She's doing very well.
And tell me this, has it been easy to pick up your right lead and your left lead?
I've only cantered her once. We went, a couple times, I think it was a couple times to the right, and one time she got the wrong lead, one time she got the right lead, and then we went the left one time and she got the wrong lead.
Okay. Because what Mom and I have both found is, a lot of horses are one-sided, but normally because they're not used to just going up and picking the right lead can be a little bit harder initially to pick up. You'll find that they're a little bit stiffer to the right, which actually, the right lead canter actually is better because it's more stacked up. They're not used to going that way, and they don't overbend that way, so they're not obviously throwing the shoulder to the outside. So that's something that you might... And again, I might be wrong. She might be picking up perfectly, but if that's something to suspect that, if she gets there's a little confusion between picking up the right and left lead, that's fantastic. Yeah, go ahead.
We found that, the second time that I picked up the right lead canter, I bended her, more to the outside, and that got the correct lead. And
perfect.
I wasn't able to get her to bend that well going to the left, but I think if I play with it a little bit more, we might be able to work on getting the correct lead.
Well, sure, and the more she understands what the leg is, the more bend you'll be able to ask, that you'll be able to ask her to do leg yields and whatnot. I mean, that's fantastic, and the speed and how fast you want the trot to go and how slow you want the trot to go, they're all little stepping stones and more collection, and that's exactly how you get to that. That's perfect.
Mm-hmm. And are there any particular exercises that you use to help do that, Lainey?
Well, my mom does, when she's done with doing a lot of the trail riding, we do a lot of lunge work, and then, in the we spiral the circle in, spiral the circle out. I mean, sure, they're not going to know what a leg yield is, but it's never too soon to teach them that. It doesn't mean it has to be a perfect leg yield with the horse being bent on the bit, but you can start, bringing the circle a little bit smaller and teaching them a leg yield by leg yielding the circle out, and a lot of guidance with the outside rein. Never make sure you're not crossing over their withers, but using the rein as a guiding thing, opening, a lot of opening of the reins, wider hands, so as to funnel the horse to be a bit straighter. And again, lots of serpentines, lots of changes in direction, because that's the best way you're going to teach them how to learn what exactly the leg is and the different mechanisms and uses of the leg.
Yeah, and I've been doing serpentines and figure eights and stuff at the walk mostly. She's not great at bending, so I've been working on that at the walk and, asking her a little bit at the trot, and she's not quite getting it at the trot yet.
How is her temperament, Alison? Is she handling all the work pretty well, and do you still love her?
Oh yeah, she's she's definitely great. I think she tries really hard. She hasn't done anything bad to me. She's very sweet. I enjoy, and I she's got nice gaits. I enjoy riding her, so it's going well. Yeah.
And I wouldn't, I wouldn't be so hemmed up on the whole on having a true bend. I mean, I wouldn't mind. I would work on riding her forward and straight as opposed to really working on a true bend, because the bend is going to come after she knows what the leg is. So I work on a lot of forward and back, and make her, you know, really encourage her to do a four-loop serpentine, even if she's completely bent to the outside. You know, the only way she's going to learn is by forcing yourself to make yourself ask her to do it, if that makes any sense.
Right. And that is the one thing. I feel like she understands slowing down and stopping more than she understands forward. Like I definitely I don't think she totally gets what my leg is for. I mean, I'm feeling like she's getting it a little bit more, but she still doesn't quite understand.
And are you riding her in a loose ring Snapple?
Yes.
Oh, that a girl. Perfect. Perfect.
There we go.
Alison, you're making it quite easy for us. You're doing everything right. Alison, what have you got planned for the next sort of month or so? And Lainey, do you have any good ideas about anything else that she should be doing? Why don't you go first, Alison?
Well, I guess the plan is just to, you know, keep working on that and getting her to understand moving off my leg. I do have one question. One thing that's come up like the last few times I've ridden her is, well, the lesson that I had on Saturday, probably about 30 minutes into the lesson or so, and actually it was when another horse had left the ring and gone back into the barn, and I guess Maggie decided that she was done also, and she started, you know, kind of bulging out, and I think she was trying to bulge herself all the way back to the barn, and, you know, so I was really, you know, trying to get her back into the ring, and then she would just stop. And, you know, I was kicking and kicking and kicking, and she just wouldn't go. And it took a lot of effort to get her back into the ring and to do something before I took her back to the barn. And then when I rode her on Sunday, it was a little bit of the same, that she, you know, when we would get close to that side of the ring, heading towards the barn, she'd try to bulge out and head back to the barn.
So what I would do is, again, that's another kind of, That sounds really naughty of her.
Yes.
A little piggish. A lot of neck reining too. And you know, I would set her up for success by, you know, I would work her when, you know, the next couple of days, maybe work her when, you know, nobody's going to be in the ring, or when, you know, somebody's going to be in the ring and you're going to be, and they just, or they come in after you, kind of thing. Set her up for success. And lots of forward work. I would do a lot of your initial work. Even if you started, I know Karen O'Connor likes to work a lot on warming up in the canter first, and then she comes down, because the canter is the best way to improve the trot. So kind of getting her initially really, really forward, and whenever she is good, I can't stress enough, really praising her when she is good. So as soon as she goes by that end of the arena before bolting, one time, really good girl, you're a pack, good girl, and then same. In the same token, if she's naughty, nipping it right away. Be sterner, giving her a kick, but as soon as she reacts in any sort of positive way to that leg, really rewarding her, you know, with a pat or with your voice. And again, if she's getting really sticky.
We wondered if maybe, you know, the first couple of rides that I was, you know, praising her so much when she, you know, slowed down and halted, that she started to understand, you know, a pat and good girl as a cue to stop.
That could be very, very, sure. And a lot of horses, you'll find, it's funny, everybody thinks the trackless is these crazy horses, and they can be, but a lot of times their nerves don't come out from being wild and running away with you. It comes from stopping. They kind of shut down. And when that happens, my mom likes to say that kind of you unstick them kind of thing. You kind of turn them a different way or whatever you can do to get them forward thinking, let go of the reins. And as soon as there is a forward movement, good girl, give her a pat. But I would stress, you know, I like how you finish on a good note. You made her go somewhere before finishing up. That was great. But maybe the next time you maybe take her out on a trail ride, anything that makes her go more forward. Right?
Okay.
Because that's all that is an evasion from the leg. And that's her way of reacting. And that's her nerves coming out. It's her being nervous and kind of just shutting down, saying, nope, can't do it. I'm shutting down now.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so the best way to kind of beat that battle is by doing exactly what you're doing, rewarding her the second she moves off your leg, getting her out on trail rides, anything to encourage her to be a little bit forward. Because to me, from what I hear from you, it sounds like she's going to be one. going to be one that's going to be a little bit evasive of the leg by going slower. That's her right. defense mechanism is to stop. So, and again, that, to me, for an amateur that's starting off with a horse, that's probably the best bad fault to have than one that wants to take off with you and run away with you, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Also, do you have access to a round pen at all?
Sorry, say that again?
Do you have access to a round pen at all?
No, I don't.
Okay, good. So lunging is another great thing. Another great thing. And it might help if you have someone lunge you on her. So if she's turning out on the lunge line at all and you ride her, that's another great way to teach her to lunge better. Is giving yourself the good old, you know, lunge lesson. That's going back to the basics.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Good. Lots to work on.
lots of homework.
Well, thank you both so much again for joining us. I'm really enjoying listening to all this and learning as I'm listening. And Alison, it sounds like you have your work cut out for you over the next month or so. And I hope you'll come back and join us and give us another progress report.
Definitely. And Alison, you know, I don't know if there is any cross-country schooling days, getting her off the property. Those are going to be things that are going to get her more forward-thinking. So right now, for this next month, you know, if I were you, I would work on your job is getting her forward. But you have to tell me, oh, geez, I got to slow her down, because then you'll be able to start to really work on that stuff. You know,
right.
Let's really nip that kind of bad habit in the butt and get her kind of more forward thinking, so that when you put a leg on, she's like, yes, ma'am. So that's to me, that would be your homework for the next month.
Okay, sounds good.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And Lainey, thank you for your time and congratulations again for a super weekend at Fairhill. And we will circle back around in a month or so and see how you're both doing. Thank you both very much again for joining us.
Hi, Glenn here from the Horse Radio Network, and I am with Cassie from Bitter Britain, and it is that time of the year that everybody looks forward to.
Yes, Glenn, it is. It's tent sale week here at Bitter Britain, and of course our tent sale runs Thursday, October 25th, through Saturday, October 27th. And if you're coming in store, we got some great deals for you. We also have, if you get here early, we have goodie bags for the first 50 people to come in the door each day. And we'll also have door prizes throughout the day, and of course those shopping sprees, two each day, $250 each, and then
each day.
And then the last day, Saturday, there's one $250 spree that we give away, and then one $500 shopping spree.
Jeez, John's feeling generous this year.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely stop by and see what we've got. We got some great goodies brought in for everybody, so stop by and check it out.
And you're going to do something online, too, starting today, Wednesday, correct?
Yes, definitely. If you stop by our website, we have special offer for our online fans, 20% off selected brands, and you just need to go to our website, go down the column to the left for the e-tent sale advertisement, and click there, and you can see what you can use it on, and go ahead and start shopping.
Very good. And, of course, so the online one starts today. That's Wednesday. And then your tent sale starts, when does that start again, Thursday or Friday?
Thursday the 25th. Okay. And the online tent sale runs from Wednesday the 24th through Sunday the 28th.
All right. So if you're in the area, if you're in central Pennsylvania there, and you can get over to Oxford to the store, to the tent sale, that's the thing to do. It's always an exciting atmosphere. I know. I worked many of them. So I understand what it's like. I know what you're going through this week, Cassie.
It'll be a good time for sure, Glenn.
All right. That's bitterbritain.com.
Well, thanks, as always, to Lainey and to Alison, and I look forward... I'm really enjoying this series of how to... Except, you know, between this and all the series we've had, John, on how to find your horse, there's something missing in my life. Leo can't quite fill that gap. I think I need a little thoroughbred.
Yeah, veterinarian advice is against trying to ride your Labrador, especially around one star.
Well, anyway, I was at Mid-South 3-day event this weekend, actually, and it was... it did remind me, in some ways it made me want a horse, but it did remind me, it's hard work, and the weather wasn't, we had one nice day out of 4 days, and, you know, I think three-day events, obviously you need all three phases to go right. There are always hard luck stories. I mean, I think with Eventing Nation, often I end up writing about the people who win, but it's always that, you know, there are so many people who don't win, and it's hard. And this mother came up to, I was talking to Dorothy Crowell, actually, and this sweet mother came up with her horse and told Dorothy that her horse, she decided to put him on the market because she has two children who are doing soccer and doing ballet. And she started tearing up, and I almost started tearing up, and she just said, I adore him, and told Dorothy the price, and then said, but of course, that's meaningless to the right home. That doesn't matter. It's just, I can't do everything. And it just broke my heart a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, we've all been there. We try and juggle everything. And I think, especially in the States, it's hard. It's hard. Her horse was at the sort of cusp where she was going to either have to move him up another level or not. And when you start moving up in the States, you have to start thinking about traveling a lot more.
Yeah.
And committing a lot more time and a lot more expense. And she'd obviously, you know, made a difficult decision. That's what she had to do. And I really felt for her. So definitely.
The whole underpinning of our sport, because the people we talk about so regularly, the top 5 or 10% of the sport, are completely supported by everyone who goes out and just takes part in our sport. And as you say, there are so many of them who'll never win an FEI event, maybe won't ever even win a USEA event section, but they go out there and they enjoy it and they get something from our sport, which is so, so great. But I mean, Catherine Austin from Horse and Hound, who was on the show a couple of months back, she had a joke with me once about how much I made of a one-star prize giving at a small three-day event in Wales. And I said, I'm never going to win an FEI three-day event. That person just has. They should get just as much of a burl as somebody who wins burly.
Yeah, I agree. Well, anyway, so we talked to her, and then I actually bumped into Waylon Roberts, who's Ian Roberts' son. He's a Canadian event rider. Well, they both are. And I had a lovely chat with him. I think I've never met a Canadian I didn't like. I mean, I know that. But we were chatting. He had two horses. One was in the training 3 day, and we talked a little bit about the long format, and that was interesting. I think, you know, it was fashionable for a while to say, we don't need the long format anymore. There's no place for it. You know, the horses are never going to have to do that at the upper levels. Why would we want it? But Waylon was pretty interesting, and he talked about it's not so much for the horses as it is for the riders who don't get a chance, you know, who haven't grown up with long format. They still need this.
Welcome to the Eventing Radio Show, and you're here at, you came and did the training 3 day. Why do you think long format is still important?
Well, I mean, I've taken, in the last 2 years, I've taken a couple young horses to a few training 3 days, and it just really, you know, it really gets them on the right track, and it settles them, the ABC, settles them for the D, and you actually find out a lot about your horse and about sort of how much he can do, and actually, I found out about this one this weekend that he's got a lot more in him than I thought earlier, so I'm pleased he rose to the occasion, and it's the nice thing about it is it's a sense of accomplishment after doing all three phases and 3 days and the jogs and everything, and especially now I don't have any horses sort of going at the highest level or sort of even at the intermediate type level, but for my young horses it keeps me sharp, it keeps me, you know, thinking about times and thinking about a lot about fitness, and I just love the classic format of it, because when I started eventing it was still the classic format, and I really enjoy it.
What about your students? Do they do it? Do you encourage them to do it?
Yeah, we had two others in this 3 day this weekend, and you know, it just, they've got to focus, they've got to go over their times, you've got to go walk rows and tracks, and it's just a really nice way to end the year. You feel like you've done something afterwards.
And it's so nice that you support it, because, you know, there weren't that many in the divisions here. At what level do you think that they should continue to do this, the long format?
I'd like to see, I think that a long format at the young rider level, at the championships, would be very beneficial in teaching young riders in North America, around the world, about what the sport actually is, because as beneficial as the short format is in a lot of ways, I think it just lacks the education that we used to get from the long format.
And of course, here at Mid-South, we had Diana and Dorothy giving the, you know, the sort of clinics, or almost, you know, on the steeplechase in Rosendrecht. So that was nice. And I know they did that last year at Galway Downs too, which was great.
Yeah, it's great because absolute masters and true professionals, and it's just great for when, you know, an event like Mid-South is actually giving back to the events, and then you have professionals like that is giving back to the riders. I think it's great.
And you finished on your dressage score?
Finished on my dressage score on both of them this weekend. This one in the 3-day, he was he's only 5, so I was really pleased with him. Really, really pleased with him.
Well, congratulations. I'll let you go and get your award.
Thank you.
Waylon, who you reminded me was over with Oliver Townend in Britain a couple of years ago, Samantha. I was reading some stuff from the FEI Sports Forum, and there was some interesting conversation about what we currently have, CCI and CIC, as a prelude to the new rules. And there's a lot of conversation about whether the CIC speed should be made slower to help people prepare. And yet some of the people from the more developed countries are saying, if you don't prepare to ride fences at the speed you need for CCI, you'll never be prepared, and our sport should prepare you. But what some of the delegates to the forum were reminding us was that in some nations around the world, because of cost, because of space, CIC is the sport as far as they're concerned, which I think is another reason perhaps why we shouldn't be, you know, if we're going to compact it in terms of distance, we should still be asking the test in terms of the speed so that horses are being made correctly competition fit.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you to all our guests this week. Thank you to Lainey Ashker, Waylon Roberts and Alison Stackpole. Please visit our homepage and we'll put links to their websites and social media pages there. You can subscribe to the Eventing Radio Show via iTunes to make sure you don't miss a single episode. And please check out our Facebook page too. Just look for the Eventing Radio Show and feel free to post any comments there. You can also follow me on Twitter at Samantha L. Clark, and you can follow John at John Kyle Speaks. Please support Bit of Britain at bitofbritain.com. Have a great week, enjoy your eventing, and thank you for listening.